This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 15th of February 2013. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 14th of February 2013, which this week has been edited by Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase. Our readers today are Margot Meredith.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Peter Lydiard.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. No special announcements this week. Lighting up times, today, Friday the 15th of February, sun rose at 20 past 7 in the morning and will set at 20 past 5 in the afternoon. Wednesday next week, that's the 20th, sun rises at 10 past 7 in the morning and sunset is at 5:30. If you have any problems with your memory sticks or your players, the person to contact is Lynn Parker on 01962 862826. That's 01962 862826. And there is a laminated card with this information inside each wallet should you need it. But please leave the card inside the wallet when you return it. The main headlines in the Hampshire Chronicle this week are: are motorists being taken for a ride at the pumps? Opposition grows over super school. Tory party workers resign over MP's vote against gay marriage. So we'll start with the story behind the first headline.
Are motorists being taken for a ride at the pumps? Motorists in Winchester are paying more for their petrol than in East Lee, just 6 miles down the road, an investigation by the Chronicle has shown. Prices can differ by as much as 7 pence per litre, or £3.50 on the cost of filling up an average-sized car such as the 50-litre Ford Focus. On average, Winchester drivers are paying 2.5p per litre more than in East Lee and Chandler's Ford. The differentials are there even for petrol stations of the same companies. The price of unleaded petrol from a Tesco Esso Express on Andover Road, Winchester, could cost 4p more per litre than the Tesco Esso Express in Twyford Road, Eastleigh, so that filling a 55-litre car with unleaded petrol would cost around £2.20 more each time a driver fills up. Tim Shalcross, head of technical policy at the Institute of Advanced Motorists, said, "If you talk to fuel companies, they may make excuses about the difference in distribution costs, but really there is no difference in distribution costs between Winchester and a few miles down the road." Diesel was on average 3.2p per litre more expensive in Winchester, while the cheapest unleaded petrol was being sold at the Esso Total garages in Bishopstoke Road and Tesco Express on Twyford Road, all in East Lee, at 130.9p per litre at the time of our survey. Professor Neil Marriott, Dean of Winchester Business School, said, "It probably reflects the higher costs associated with Winchester house and land prices compared to other areas. There may be an element of pricing to what the local market will bear and possible limited local competition. Economies of scale are also a factor. Outlets selling more petrol can usually charge lower prices." Luke Bosdett of the AA said the price difference could be down to what is becoming known as the Asda effect. He said its business model allows it to offer low prices at the pumps, making the money back in the aisles of hypermarkets like the one in Chandler's Ford. There are two types of towns in the UK, those with an Asda petrol station and those without, Mr. Bosnett said. It's down to what they call price matching. The supermarkets will price match the lowest prices in a town, and if you have an Asda in a neighbouring town, that tends to be why prices there are significantly cheaper. We've also got people helping in pump up the price, and it's the poor old driver who's footing the bill. The Shell garage on Eastern Lane was charging a penny a litre more than the next nearest Shell garage in Chandler's Ford. A spokesman for Shell said, "We know it is confusing and frustrating for some customers to see prices varying in their local area. There are simple business reasons for these fluctuations. We set the prices at our company-owned sites, but not at independently owned and operated Shell-branded sites. This is why we might see price variation even when sites are close together." Tesco declined to comment on why Winchester motorists pay more than those in East Lee, but was happy to comment in general terms. They said, "Our clear goal for customers is to be competitive on petrol and diesel in the local catchment area for each store. So Tesco does not operate with one national price. This is the case with all other petrol retailers in the UK," a spokesman said. Leslie Rose, social policy lead at Winchester Citizens Advice Bureau, said high fuel prices were having an impact on those with the lowest incomes. "It's one of the problems we see," he said. "The cost of running a car, with petrol prices included in that, is very difficult indeed for somebody on basic benefits." The city businesses are feeling the effects of high petrol prices too. Akhil Khan, owner of Winnell-based Wessex Taxis, said, "Our drivers do feel the impact very definitely. We do school runs, work which is subcontracted out by the council. The council wants us to have more vans so we can take wheelchairs, but that means more diesel, and we're going to have to go back to them and say, it's just getting too expensive. If we have a job in Southampton, the drivers will definitely try to fill up from there, but it can't always happen." But green campaigners argue prices are not high enough. Chris Gillam of Winchester Friends of the Earth said, "I would sympathise more with the taxi drivers of Winchester if I saw them switch their engines off more. They do not behave as if the price of fuel is that great. I see them outside my house and they're happy to leave the engine running while they wait for people. It's a great pity that the government has come off the fuel price escalator. Fuel ought to be a lot more than it is. There's always a complaint about the price of petrol, but in terms of real costs of motoring, motoring is highly subsidised. It's one of those lovely myths that the motorist is being hard done by. He's not. He's being subsidised."
Opposition grows over super school. Local councillors have weighed into the debate over a new super school in Winchester. In a formal statement, Lib Dem City and County councillors criticised the County Council's traffic plans for the proposed 420-place primary school at the Westgate School. Many residents in Cheriton Road and Lynx Road oppose the plans, saying they would cause traffic chaos, a position supported by County Councillor Frenette Dickens and City Councillors Robert Hutchison, Ray Pearce and Martin Todd. In a statement, the councillors said, "While the architecture of the new school buildings is of a high standard, irresponsibly inadequate attention has been given to the traffic, transport and safety issues arising from 420 new primary pupils attending the expanded Westgate School and the proposed relocation of the nursery school. Planning permission for the new building should be withheld until there is a clear plan with timetable and budget for investing in transport infrastructure in the vicinity of the school in order to create a safer environment with new measures to reduce congestion and increase safety in and around Cheriton Road. The plan should make it easier for the majority of the 4 to 16-year-old pupils to walk for some or all of their journey to school, or for the older pupils to cycle. It comes after County Council Highways Officer Ben Clifton said in a report that he would be unable to recommend approving the new school without more information on several issues, including parking, the catchment area, school start and finish times, and the routes children would walk to school. Mr. Clifton said, "I'm not able to make a positive recommendation on highways and transport at this stage, pending submission of the further information requested." Residents met again on Monday to discuss the issue. Paul Cooper said, "We think the county needs to rethink the scheme. Not only does it go against the full flood neighbourhood design statement, which said you must not do anything to increase traffic on Cheriton Road, it also puts an unsafe burden on the surrounding road network. There hasn't been a lot of accidents, but it is an accident waiting to happen." Mr. Cooper of Cheriton Road added, "We now have a situation where two competing primary schools with identical catchment areas are placed within 100 metres of each other, whilst the primary area of demand is 2 miles away in Abbots Barton and across three heavily trafficked roads. Children will be encouraged to walk or cycle, it is claimed. Even the Highways Department noted that only one child cycles to Westgate currently. This is arrant nonsense. What parent will not want to deliver their charges by car?" A County Council Regulatory Committee is due to discuss the plan on March the 13th.
Tory party workers resign over MP's vote against gay marriage. Winchester MP Steve Bryan has come under fire for his anti-gay marriage stance. Two senior members of the Winchester Conservative Association have expressed anger because of his opposition, which culminated in a vote in the House of Commons last Tuesday. They are Paul Twelvetree, the Deputy Political Chairman, and Dave Chawner, who's responsible for overseeing the delivery of leaflets. Mr. Chawner told the Chronicle that he had resigned from the party and felt personally let down, as Mr. Bryan and his wife had attended his civil partnership ceremony and reception. Mr. Chawner, 63, said, "It has been a major issue for many gay and lesbian people. It touches a raw nerve." I asked him why he was taking this view, and he responded by saying, "I'm a Christian and church-going." As an MP, surely you should represent the majority view and not just your own personal view. He went on to say that his postbag was overwhelmingly against gay marriage. "It is just the God Squad down in the Chandler's Ford area, a vocal minority, a few hundred out of 70,000 people. When I said that he should represent the silent majority, I didn't get much of a reply. I'm gay. Around 10% of the population are gay, so that's 7,000 men and women in the constituency who have had a difficult enough life. When I was growing up in the 60s, it was illegal. A lot of people had lives distorted and disturbed." Mr. Twelvetree was unavailable for comment as he is currently away. Mr. Chawner added, "He, Mr. Twelvetree, was fuming about it. I don't think he has resigned from the Winchester Conservative Association, but from Steve Bryan's campaign team." Mr. Bryan, in an email, said, "People come and go from political parties all the time. It's hardly a secret, as evidenced by my postbag and that of every other MP, that this issue was deeply divisive across the political spectrum. Mearn Valley MP George Hollingbury voted in favour of gay marriage, saying, 'I have always believed that a defining characteristic of any developed society is that it treats its citizens equally.'"
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death notices. Barnes, Gwyneth Barnes, on the 9th of February at home, aged 92. Brown, Mark Iverson Brown, at home on the 4th of February, aged 54. Crockford, Edith Mary, known as Edie Crockford, in the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 11th of February, aged 94. Curran, Timothy Michael Curran, on the 12th of February, at home. Divine, Catherine, known as Kitty Divine, in Ireland on the 7th of January, aged 89. Dunn, Gerald Dunn, on the 6th of February, aged 88. Jolliffe, Eileen May Jolliffe, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, Winchester, on the 7th of February, aged 102. Lampard, Ray Lampard, on the 10th of February, aged 82. Manning, Isabel Manning, née Horton, on the 8th of February, aged 84. O'Grady, John, known as Jack O'Grady, on the 7th of February at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 91. Osborne, Doreen Winifred Osborne, on the 2nd of February, aged 79. Rossi, Tony Rossi, on the 8th of February, aged 88. Stagg, Leslie Stagg, at Sunrise Senior Living, on the 10th of February, aged 84. Steele, Leslie Steele, at home on the 9th of February, aged 90. And Charles Henry Taylor, on the 6th of February. That concludes the death notices, and next we have Christian comment.
This week it is written by Terry E. Hemming, and he entitles it, We Can All Work With God. You really would think that everything was well after the BSE scare and that all food was traceable. However, we are now learning that it is not true, and everything on our plate is not as we thought. Apart from pointing the finger of blame, is there a Christian response to this? I think there is, although some people would say that Christianity is to blame. They argue that our understanding of the command to have dominion over the earth has meant that we have exploited it thoughtlessly. I would like to point out to the Christian tradition both of stewardship, which is caring for God's creation, and for the hope of looking forward to a new creation where harmony shall be restored. In this understanding, everything has value because God has made it and declared it good, and Christ has redeemed it and therefore said it is valuable. Christians cannot, therefore, denigrate the material world. Paul also argues that we should seek fairness in our use of what we have. And then I remember the stories of the saints and their relationship to animals. Why does the church tell of St. Jerome and his taking the thorn from the paw of the lion? Or St. Cuthbert having his feet warmed by the otters on the seashore? It is because it wants to emphasize that godliness means a care for and a living in harmony with the animals. And what about us? If we cannot find a lion with a thorn in his paw, or our job isn't running a meat processing plant, do we then have nothing to do? No. Thinking about our food is an important part of our relationship with each other and with the earth. We may need to be careful because of austerity, and Christianity has always advocated not showing off with luxury when others are in need. But that doesn't mean aiming always for the cheapest we can find. The success of fair trade shows how people can think of more than pennies and pounds. The success of the Hampshire farmers' markets and veggie boxes shows how people are interested in where their food comes from. We all need to play our small part in thinking and being discerning in our shopping patterns, as well as the law to make sure there is honesty on the part of the sellers. I like the story of the new country priest who leant over the hedge and congratulated Bert on his lovely garden. "But isn't it wonderful what God does in your garden?" he enthused. "Oh, he said, but you should have seen it when God had it all to himself," was the astute reply. Let us play our part in working with him.
We now move on to letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860 836, that's 01962 860 836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write in the traditional way to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL, that's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. So we'll start off with the first letter. The first two letters are on the same topic. Then we have quite a number of letters about the street market in Winchester High Street. And then there are various other letters thereafter. So we'll start off with the first letter.
And Shirley Keneally, I think that's how you pronounce it, Keneally, writes that denial that goes against the grain. Sir, I can understand the anxiety carers and ailing people feel about the livable pathway. Can I just explain that is when the medical profession decide to allow a person to die as comfortably as possible? My husband died last month, and I speak from experience. The prospect of denying one's loved one goes against the grain, and I felt it whilst caring for him at home, unable to follow advice about him not eating or even drinking. He usually ate something and took regular sips of whatever was offered. As it was Christmas, he even enjoyed a slurp of beer and a chocolate or two, even though at times it appeared he was nearing his end. Having spent the last year in and out of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, his last stay was very different. I saw their end-of-life procedures in practice, starting with the consultant saying he might not be able to go home, and we agreed a do-not-resuscitate policy. His wish to die at home was respected, and every attempt made to stabilise him and treat the dehydration and infection that had taken him into hospital. Despite norovirus and shortage of staff, the care was excellent. McNillian nurses were also involved. I was kept fully informed whilst waiting for his homecoming. With his bed in our sitting room, he participated in Christmas festivities around the dining table. Two carers, three times a day, made it possible for me to care for him, and out-of-hours doctors and district nurses came to our rescue. In the last 2 weeks, overnight nursing was provided by Marie Curie and community nurses. I never felt I was alone, with Countess Mountbatten House at the end of the phone and a clinical nurse specialist visiting. He died peacefully in the early hours, having spent the previous day enjoying the visit of two old friends and even a few treats for supper. I was glad it was me and my son with him that night. 10 years of illness is long enough, especially the last two. Did I apply the Liverpool pathway? I'm not sure. Shirley Keneally, Greyshot Close, Hairstock. Gosh, that was difficult.
Do the relatives really understand? Asks Moira Harmer. Sir, read the Liverpool Pathway piece, Chronicle, January the 31st. I wonder if the relatives of the people placed on this care pathway fully understood what the healthcare professional was really saying, the fact that their loved one was dying. I have an awful feeling that people have not grasped what the doctor or nurse is meaning. As a retired nurse, I understand what a care pathway is, but does everyone? Professionals try to find the right words to explain complex health matters, but sometimes what they say doesn't come across in the way it's meant to. No doctor or nurse wants to say what might be perceived as brutal. And this is a very difficult conversation to have, from both sides. The Liverpool care pathway is the correct care when a person is at the end of life. But do the relatives actually understand this fact? That's from Moira Harmer, East Close, Barton-on-Sea.
Now the first of the letters, number of letters, about the street market in Winchester. This one is from Pam Stevens. It's headed, Market Safety Must Be the First Priority. Sir, we agree entirely that any market should have safety as a priority. The Alresford Market, started in 1214, in King John's reign, has a prohibition sign stopping all vehicles using the service road during all the Thursday markets. We argued successfully with Winchester City Council that vehicles and the market did not mix and that pedestrians and children would be put in danger if the service road remained open. Our market has nearly 20 stall holders in the spring and summer months, and with reasonable charges ensures that the ancient traditions are preserved while encouraging a variety of goods to be sold to local shoppers. During 2014, there will be a special event to commemorate 800 years of the market, and the trustees will also be donating a special two-sided clock to the town. That is from Pam Stevens, trustee in charge of market, and Robin Atkins, chairman, New Alresford Town Trust.
And Andrew Rome writes, cut all the clutter in the high street. Sir, I've been working in Winchester now for 15 years, and I know that I am not the only person who thinks the inclusion of market stalls up and down the historic high street is a poor backward step. It is cluttered and the site of history is blocked and ruined by this inclusion. Does the ancient capital of Wessex really need market stalls selling sweets and other things we don't require? Andrew Rome, Jury Street, Winchester.
Phil Yates writes that it's the right decision to retain the bus route. Sir, the correct decision has been made by all concerned regarding the alteration in the layout of the market stalls at the lower end of the High Street, Winchester, and keeping the bus route as it has been for many years. Rerouting buses to emerge from the other end of the bus station into Friars Gate would mean the loss of two very important bus stops. The one outside Marks and Spencer is for passengers, not only for local and country areas in one direction, but also for park and ride users. The other bus stop in St George's Street also serves local and country buses in another direction. The time to consider rerouting is if and when the Silver Hill redevelopment scheme comes into force. Even then, we will lose the Marks and Spencer bus stop, and the St George's Street stop will have to be resited further up the street by Layton's and the toy cupboard shops. In the meantime, keep to the present bus route, and if the alterations do not work out, remove the market stalls from the lower end of the High Street and resite them elsewhere. Simple. That's from Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
And another letter on the same subject. This is from Jeanette and Denise Archdeacon. Stalls or buses? The solution is simple, sir. Yes, the High Street can get a bit cramped with the buses squeezing past the market stalls. So, take the simple way out. Leave the stalls where they are. They add to the life and fun of the High Street. But let the buses turn left out of the bus station, left again into Eastgate Street, and left again into Friars Gate, and so up into St George's Street. Sorted. So that's from Jeanette and Denise Archdeacon, Saxon Road, Hyde, Winchester.
And Steve McCarthy has another opinion as well. Keep market and bus routes apart. Sir, re the city market. The current situation is very confusing. The bus route is pedestrianised, but not completely. I have seen several near misses in 30 years living in Winchester. The bus drivers do a wonderful job avoiding pedestrians who wander across this area. Would it be possible for the future Silver Hill plans to include market stores of different kinds? Visitors and residents always enjoy markets. The buses could be rerouted around the back of the bus station. Other market towns in which I have lived or visited, like Oxford, have very successful, partly open markets quite separate from the bus routes. They are very popular. See McCarthy, Abbey Hill Road, Winchester.
And continuing the theme of bus stops, this letter from Mr. Wheeler says bus stops should be close to shops. Sir, the recent accident in the lower part of the precinct in Winchester city centre is the first, to my knowledge. I think that the placing of the market stalls below the Middlebrook Street junction is dangerous, and the alterations do not make it any safer. I am unable to agree with Councillor Tate and those suggesting buses should be diverted via Friarsgate. They are obviously not bus users. The lay-by outside the Iceland store would not be able to cope with the number of vehicles, and this would cause a build-up of traffic. There is nowhere to put bus stops in St George's Street. There are two bus stops in Middlebrook Street, one for park and ride and the other for services to Stanmore, Fareham, Southampton and Eastleigh. All others use the stops behind Marks and Spencer. In an average hour, the number of vehicle movements is 32. All these are well used. We should be encouraging the use of public transport and have the bus stops convenient for the shops. The situation cannot be compared to the Silver Hill development. If that ever comes about, it would include a new bus station and routes would have to be altered. So writes Mr. C.J. Wheeler, Churchfields, Twyford.
The next letter is not about the buses and the market. It's about cars. Figures bear out routes' importance. It's written by David Budd. Sir, the route through Upper St. Swithin's and Simmons Street is the essential artery for folk living south of the city to access the city centre and east. Its importance is borne out by the traffic figures illogically given as the reason to close it. Residents who have the privilege and convenience of living in the city should count their blessings and consider the conditions of 2013, not 1417, and not seek to inconvenience the many and endanger the livelihood of traders in the square. That's from David Budd, Beaufort Road, Winchester.
And along the same theme as well, Peter Stewart writes, no surrender to fiefdom mentality. Sir, perhaps a Pied Piper is needed if Winchester's rat-run measures are not working. With so many, quote, rats defying the no-access signs, that is, two per minute, as reported in the Chronicle of January the 31st, or 721 a day, as reported in the Chronicle of January the 10th, this is not about rats, but anti-democratic restrictions imposed on public roads against the will of the people. They should be scrapped as proof that England will never surrender again to Europe's fiefdom mentality. So writes Peter Stewart, Beaver Drive, Bishopstoke.
Councillors must be representative, writes Natalie Carpenter. Sir, I have to respond to Robin Atkins's sentiments regarding New Alsford Town Council, from Letters, February the 7th. I have been an independent councillor for almost 2 years. This has mostly meant I have very often been in a majority of one, as many decisions have appeared to me to have a political bias. Although I understand that across the country it's quite normal to have politically allied councillors on both parish and county councils, it is something that I feel needs changing. On a local level, councillors have a responsibility to their town, and if central government dictates that Alresford has to have 500 homes, the council should be representing the interests of their town rather than follow the dictates of party. Some may argue they can do both. Parish councillors are unpaid, and several of us have a living to earn. One of the members who recently resigned did so because he felt unable to commit to the time required for the position. I am hoping that more members of the local community will stand for election in May, and they will be independent, like myself, and prepared to truly represent the needs of Alresford. The town plan will pass into history as either a triumph or a disaster. Certainly it has begun badly. There is a great deal to be done, and I hope with the assistance of all residents, we as a council can take our beautiful town forward for the next generation without ruining it for them in the process. That letter is from Natalie Carpenter, Grange Road, Alresford.
Well, it's been a while since we've had a letter about traffic, so here, so here is one. It's called Time Limit Would Curb Commuters, and it's from Ira Perry-Jones. Sir, Vicky Weston is being urged to impose a four-hour time limit on parking in the lay-by by Hockley Link. Chronicle, February the 7th. May I suggest that she consider applying the same treatment to the Tunbridge Garnier Road car park at the foot of St Catherine's Hill? Local residents who wish to enjoy a walk from there on a weekday using the newly surfaced pathway or heading up the hill are frustrated by being unable to park. The car park is invariably full. I can only assume that the culprits are also car-sharing commuters working in Winchester. I consider this to be unfair to walkers. It's from Ira Perry-Jones, Sleepers Hill, Winchester.
A refreshing thought. Mr. E. J.E. Lars says, please explain your vote, Mr. Brine. Sir, an open letter to Steve Brine, MP. Dear Mr. Brine, why did you vote against gay marriages? Are we not all equal? J.E. Lars, Frampton Way, Kingsworthy.
Butchers? Alresford has two of the best, writes Richard Milligan. Sir, there are excellent family butchers in the Winchester area. I know, because we have two here in Alresford. Whether it's beef, pork or lamb, these people will not pull the wool over your eyes, unlike the supermarkets. That letter is from Richard Milligan, Mill Lane Cottage, Bishop's Sutton.
Well, it's time to get back to traffic again. This is called Diverting This Road Makes No Sense, and it's from Belinda Ward. Sir, for those of us living north of Winchester, e.g. Worthy Down, South Wanston, Sutton Scotney, Wanston, Andover, and A34 Junction at Three Maids Hill roundabout, the thought of diverting the Andover Road through a new development seems very bad planning. Put roundabouts on Andover Road, not diversions for the development. We all visit Winchester daily, weekly, or occasionally by car, bus, or by ambulance. To divert this traffic through a new development is pointless. To avoid this diversion, we will have to take Hairstock Lane to Stockbridge Road. The Basingstoke-Winchester bus is already diverted through South Wanston. Another diversion will add at least 10 minutes to that trip for people and school children. There is no park and ride for those living north of the city. I hope the planners will use their common sense and not allow Carla Holmes' scheme to divert the Andover Road. It's from Belinda Ward, Moorcroft Close, Sutton Scotney.
And a letter of appreciation from Robert Larrard. Dave the Brave is second to none. Sir, our milkman, Dave Abbott, serves the area from Basingstoke to Northington Weald and roundabout. His beat contains several steep hills, but he always gets through. People nickname him Dave the Brave. And it's from Robert Larrard, Swarriton, Orsford.
Well, that concludes our letters, and that was certainly one of the most lively collections of letters that we've had on the paper for quite some time. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed all that. Anyway, now for something, well, I won't say less entertaining. We now go on to the items of historical interest. And we have items from 150, 100, two from 50 years ago, and two from 25 years ago. So we'll start off with the one from 150 years ago.
Yes, this was written in the Chronicle in 1863, and it really is worth listening to. At Westminster Police Court on Tuesday, a respectable woman said she had been wed to a gentleman who had deserted her, since which the Roman Catholic priest who had married them had drugged her with chloroform and taken away her wedding ring, for which she wished a summons against him. Mr. Painter suggested if she were rendered insensible by such means, it would be difficult for her to say what was done. Appellant replied that she had no power to resist, but was conscious of what occurred.
Well, 100 years ago was 1913. The most tragic story in the annals of polar exploration reached London on Monday, 11 months after Amundsen's conquest of the South Pole, comes the melancholy news of the death of Captain Robert Falcon Scott, whose expedition the Norwegian explorer forestalled so dramatically. The four companions who accompanied Captain Scott and reached the pole on January the 18th last year also perished, overwhelmed on the return journey. In the diary found on Captain Scott was his last message. We are weak, and writing is difficult, but I do not regret this journey, which has shown us that Englishmen can endure hardship, help one another, and meet death with fortitude. Things have come out against us, and we have no cause for complaint, but bow to the will of Providence, determined to do our best to the last. I appeal to our countrymen to see that those who depend on us are properly provided for.
Fifty years ago, 1963. This is the first of two comments. The Common Market took a back seat when Hampshire farmers met at Winchester Guildhall on Friday. Instead, the possibility of the Royal Counties Show coming to Winchester and the need for import controls were the main topics at the annual meeting and dinner of Hampshire County Branch of the National Farmers Union. So great was the interest in the annual report that the meeting ended minutes before the guests arrived at the dinner. And the second, although excavation at the former cathedral car park site had provided enlightening discoveries, its full significance could not be interpreted until there had been further examination of the brooks, Martin Biddle told the Field Club on Thursday. Mr. Biddle, consulting director to Winchester Excavating Committee, said excavation in the Brooks area had already proved the existence of a 12th century townhouse, which would have to be related to the cathedral site before a true picture emerged.
I have two pieces from 25 years ago, that's 1988, and the first one is this. Winchester Preservation Trust cannot support the need for a motorway around the city unless a tunnel is included in the scheme. Dr. Christopher Gillam, on behalf of the Trust, told the M3 inquiry, "It's the tunnel or no motorway at all." He said the landscape around was one of the jewels in England's crown, adding that the reprieve to the water meadows, threatened by an earlier route, had been snatched at too readily to appreciate the cost. And the second piece is this. Two parish councils appeared before the M3 inquiry and appealed to the inspector to save their villages. Mrs. Elizabeth Gilman, chairman of Compton and Shawford PC, said the M3 would divide the village and directly affect the lives of all residents. It would pass at a great height through the middle of the village, exaggerating the physical and psychological divisions. I am not aware of any motorway which divides a sizeable village into two parts, said Mrs. Gilman.
Next, we have the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment, and that will be followed by first person.
Winchester prices and the Winchester effect. People living in Winchester have grown used to the notion that they are obliged to pay for the privilege of living here. Sky-high house prices is one example. Another is the government's perception that everyone living in the district is affluent and so gives more funding to the north rather than to our city and county councils to run our services. But now it seems the people in Winchester can also happily afford to pay more for the delight of filling their cars with petrol. A Hampshire Chronicle investigation has found that motorists in Winchester are paying more for their petrol than in East Lee, just a few miles down the road. Prices can differ by as much as 7 pence per litre, or £3.50 on the cost of filling up an average size car, such as a 50-litre Ford Focus. On average, Winchester drivers are paying 2.5 pence per litre more than in East Lee and Chelmsford. Are they being taken for a ride? You decide. But there are no legitimate reasons why Winchester drivers should be charged more. Motorists are more likely to vote with their right foot and seek out the garages which charge the best rates.
First person this week is written by Rosemary McMullen, and she entitles it Meeting the Deadline. I had hoped to be writing this at my new desk. A couple of weeks ago, I fell for an elegant white desk with cute little pigeonholes and a pull-up top that would accommodate my computer screen, keyboard and mouse mat with room to spare. My enthusiasm waned when I got home and realised its height made it impossible to fit in against the wall under my windows. Reluctantly, I rang to exchange this beauty for a simple desk and arranged for delivery. Let's face it, those pigeonholes would soon become cluttered and a magnet for all of them might come in useful one day rubbish I tend to hoard. Pity I had to pay for both desks, but would get a refund for the first in a few days. Panic struck when I received two letters from the supplier confirming delivery next day. Two letters? Two desks? A speedy phone call established the elegant desk had indeed been cancelled as requested, but no refund organised as promised. Preparing for the arrival of the second choice involved clearing out old files, removing stationery from drawers and dragging my old desk into my hallway. Then I lugged my heavy Hoover upstairs and gave the carpet a long overdue clean. Happily, chucking out old train timetables, instruction booklets and small unidentified objects into a black bag destined for the dustbin, I cast a smug look around my now streamlined office and went to bed, setting the alarm for 7 a.m., the earliest delivery time in the slot allocated. The eagerly anticipated new desk arrived good and early, and I set to unpacking straight away. Oh dear! I knew it was simple self-assembly, but there was not a single item to fix it together with. With a deadline booming and looming, I simply could not wait for replacements, which would take a week, so dragged my old desk back again. This proved fatal to the desk, that is. It fell apart. The poor old desk has certainly seen better days and didn't deserve the manhandling I put it through. I managed to put the sturdy old faithful back together and settle down to work. And then it struck me. What I really need to do is to buy a pot of paint and give it a facelift. Stepping over the flat pack, lying reproachfully on the carpet, I rang the store and said, as I couldn't put it up without the fixings and couldn't wait for it to be sorted out, I'd like the desk collected. This will take 6 days, and then I'll have to ring to arrange a refund. I may well be up for the, quote, worst customer of the year award, and won't dare shop there again. But, and this is written in black letters, headline, I have met my deadline. P.S. Struggling to repack the desk, I asked a friend to help. I don't believe it, he cried in true Meldrew style. There, taped to a bit of discarded, crumbling white paper, was a little red plastic bag. I shall study the instructions, and perhaps tomorrow I will have to ring the store and admit that what an absolute idiot I am.
We now move on to items of general news interest.
And the first one is, more officers could be armed with tasers. New chief wants to crack down on assaults on police. Hundreds more police officers could be armed with taser guns to respond to violence on the streets of Hampshire, the Hampshire Chronicle can reveal. The county's new chief constable, Andy Marsh, said a review was underway that could see frontline police in rural communities given the weapon to assist in the fight against crime. It comes as new figures reveal that there were 70 crimes involving firearms in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight during the past year, and after repeated attacks and assaults on officers and PCSOs in the past 6 weeks. Meanwhile, during the New Year period, 11 officers and 3 PCSOs were attacked during a spate of violence across the county. One PC was left with a broken nose, another was head-butted and bitten whilst on duty in the north of the county, and in Winchester, 2 officers were punched and spat at. Mr. Marsh, 46, who was appointed chief constable after being the favoured candidate of Hampshire's Police and Crime Commissioner Simon Hayes, revealed the taser plan during his first interview since he took up the post last week. He had held the post of Deputy Chief Constable since joining the force in September 2010 from Wiltshire Constabulary. He is also the country's leading police officer for firearms and shotguns and advises the 43 forces in England and Wales on how to grant, revoke and renew more than 700,000 gun certificates which currently exist. Mr. Marsh said he worried about the safety of officers on the front line and wanted to ensure they were equipped to do a dangerous job. He said, I am reviewing the number of officers equipped with taser, and it may well be that we extend the use of taser to officers in isolated and rural communities so they can better protect themselves and the people living there. There isn't strong evidence of a rise in violence to police officers, but I do not regard any violence as acceptable, and if that means we have to equip them, then that's what we will do. Currently, only armed officers are issued with tasers in Hampshire, whilst more carry the weapon on the Isle of Wight. The Chief Constable also revealed a number of other pledges he wants to fulfil in his new role, as follows. I want the people who work for Hampshire Constabulary and the public to say I was visible and accessible, that I listened. I want the people in the organisation to say I cared about them and developed leadership so they were well motivated, productive and delivered on their role to make a difference to the communities of Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. I want crime and antisocial behaviour to continue to fall. I want us to be dynamic and responsive. I would want partners to say we worked well with them to make things better for the public. I want people to be proud of Hampshire Constabulary and feel we do a good job. And finally, I want us to be recognised as one of the best forces in England and Wales.
Fundraiser marred by lead theft. It was supposed to be a night a village church moved closer to securing its future. Instead, a fundraiser for the church in Otterbourne was marred when thieves stripped the lead from the roof the night before. They also cut through electricity cables to the security lights, causing around £5,000 worth of damage. Organiser Tony Taylor said, "It's been a roller coaster. The vicar said we go two steps forward and one step back." It's just extraordinary how these people can do this. I'm staggered. But the event raised £3,500, smashing the 2,000 target they'd set themselves. The Chronicle reported last month how the Taylor family, pictured below, had organised the fundraising event to do their bit for the appeal to repair the church's tower. Mr. Taylor said St. Matthew's had been a focal point for his family for more than 40 years, so when they heard the church's blight, they worked together on their idea to help to save it. Despite the setback, Mr. Taylor is undeterred. "The event could not have gone any better, and I guess we'll now have to arrange another event to pay for the roof," he said. The theft took place at some time between 2 p.m. on February the 1st and 10 a.m. on February the 2nd. The offenders gained access to the roof of the vestry and organ room, cutting through the electricity cables to the security lighting. Police are now investigating and have appealed for witnesses. Anyone with any information should call the police on 101.
Bigger guns come out as by-election fight hots up. Liberal Democrat leader Nick Clegg said on Monday that he is confident his party will win the hotly contested Eastleigh by-election. The Deputy Prime Minister was the first of the big three party leaders to visit the town in the run-up to the by-election on February the 28th that looks to be a close battle between the coalition partners. But Mr. Clegg refused to apologise for the behaviour of the former Lib Dem MP, Chris Huhne, who stood down after pleading guilty to perverting the course of justice last week. Mr. Clegg was touring Eastleigh College with his party's candidate, Mike Thornton, and met apprentices in the auto workshop. Mr. Clegg said, "I am confident we will keep hold of this seat, but not because I say so, but because the people of Eastleigh are telling us that. We need to be quite clear where our differences lie with the Conservatives. It's Liberal Democrats that have lowered council tax in Eastleigh. It is Liberal Democrats that are protecting the green spaces. For the last 10 years, we have seen a real terms council tax cut here in Eastleigh." Meanwhile, Community Secretary Eric Pickles said council tax would be a key battleground in the Eastleigh by-election. Joining his party hopeful, Maria Hutchings, on the campaign trail in the yachting village of Hamble, he warned that voting for the Liberal Democrats could pave the way for a massive hike in bills. Mr. Clegg said he would not say it was his duty to say sorry for his former colleague, Mr. Huhne, who is awaiting sentence. Asked repeatedly, Mr. Clegg said, "Chris Huhne needs to speak for himself. Whatever anyone may think of Chris Huhne, everybody will tell you locally he was an extremely good local MP." Mr. Huhne held the seat for the Lib Dems at the 2010 by-general election with a majority of 3,864. Elsewhere on the campaign trail, the UK Independence Party named its candidate to fight the by-election. Diane James is a Waverley Borough Councillor in Surrey and a healthcare expert. She joined UKIP in 2010, but is listed as an independent councillor on the council's website. "I plan to fight hard and show the people of the constituency that they can vote for someone with integrity and commitment. A real opposition to the failed policies of the coalition and the virtually invisible Labour Party," she said.
And this next piece is from the Belgarum column, which we sometimes read. It's entitled "Quite Enough Duff Stuff." The new edition of the Hampshire A to Z Street Atlas has just been printed. It comprises 336 pages of beautifully clear maps that guide thousands of people around the county. It is a thing of multicoloured beauty. The woods marked in green, roads in vivid red, blue, yellow and green, the built-up areas in a sort of orangey buff. It is full of the latest gen. You want to know where the latest speed cameras are? No problem. The newest road network? Easy. But for all the up-to-date info, there is a huge amount of duff stuff. Deep breath. For Winchester, the youth hostel is clearly marked. Only problem, it closed in 2005. Look, there's the Textile Conservation Centre. It shut in 2009. The fire station in North Walls? Empty these 2 years. It helpfully marks the Congregational Chapel in Cheriton, near Alsard. It shut in about 1980. The chapel is hard by a sawmill. Freeman's Yard closed in 1992 and has now been redeveloped for housing. And it's Seawards Bridge outside Alsford, not Stewards Bridge. It would be nice if the historic name is retained and not gradually lost by default.
City Council tax set to be frozen again. Winchester City Civic Chiefs propose to freeze their council tax increase for the second year running. The ruling Conservative group on the City Council want to keep the average Band D charge at £126.27. A report on the proposed tax was due to go to the Cabinet meeting yesterday, that's Wednesday, as the Chronicle went to press. The full council is due to make a decision on February the 21st. The council would be set for a windfall as the government has pledged to give a grant equivalent to the council having set a 1% increase.
Parishioners upset over church plans. Kingsworthy residents have criticised plans for major investment at a village church. The Parochial Church Council at St Mary's Church in London Road is planning a £40,000 upgrade, including rewiring the building, cameras, and drop-down screens, as well as new forward altar at the front of the chancel. Several screens would be put up in the church to show DVDs and link up to cameras broadcasting the services. But Malcolm Prince of Lynn Way said many members of the congregation were opposed to the changes. He said, "By moving the altar, they put everyone on show to the entire congregation, and they are also captured on camera. Some people like that, but others like peace and quiet and praying by themselves. There is likely to be an exodus if the Parochial Church Council goes ahead with this. If St Mary's is going to become an ultra-modern church in an old building, then people will start looking for alternatives. If they install these cameras and screens, they will not only damage the character of the church, but also the peace. It's a traditional building, providing traditional opportunities to worship." Mr Prince, Vice Chairman of Kingsworthy Parish Council, said the PCC had consulted the congregation, but only 35% supported the plans. Another member of the congregation, who asked not to be named, said, "This is an ancient village church, not a city centre church. It will destroy the beauty of its character. There's a strong opinion among the congregation that it should not happen, but we are not being listened to, and I think it will go ahead anyway." The Reverend Alan Gordon, rector for Kingsworthy, said St Mary's had a history of modernisation and needed to become more accessible. "St Mary's has a history of using technology developments in order to enhance the ability to communicate with the congregation," he said. "Pews were once a modern idea. Heating was once a modern idea. But we have radiators. We have a PA system and electric lighting, which were once considered modern. We are looking at a temporary communion table brought forward, and the reason for that is to make communion more accessible. At the moment, the table is some distance away from the congregation and a bit disconnected. To get there, you also have to go up a chancel step, which for many with mobility issues is difficult or impossible. So this would benefit people in wheelchairs. He added, "The acoustics in the building are very good, and we have had a number of concerts where we have found we were able to put cameras in. If you focus the camera on the choir, then you can bring the service to life. We see it as something that would contribute to the facilities of Kingsworthy as a village." He added, the PCC subcommittee had taken note of the comments and would be discussing the issue at a private meeting tonight. That was on Thursday, yesterday. Churchwarden Jill Froud added, "These changes have been discussed for the past 4 years that I have been church warden."
Dame Mary's Freedom Honour. It is an honour she never believed would be bestowed upon her. But Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Dame Mary Fagan, was left totally overwhelmed when she was given the Freedom of Southampton in recognition of her tireless work with charities and community groups. More than 100 people, including mayors from across Hampshire, witnessed the historic moment at St Mary's Church. Presenting Dame Mary with the Freedom of the City, the Mayor of Southampton, Councillor Derek Burke, said there was, quote, "no one more deserving," unquote. Appointed as the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire in 1994, her role is to be responsible for arrangements made during royal visits to the county. Her most recent was welcoming the Earl of Wessex, Prince Edward, to Winchester a fortnight ago, when he unveiled a bronze work of the Queen in the Great Hall and also opened a new building at the university. The honour means that Dame Mary has the keys to the city and can enjoy a number of privileges, such as walking her sheep through the Bargate. However, she made the congregation laugh when she asked the mayor, "Can I park anywhere I like?"
Meeting hears of hope for the homeless. Homelessness is getting worse, but hope could lie in the power of love, social media and good food, a meeting heard. The event, organised by the Winchester Church's Night Shelter, heard the recession continues to drive up the number of people without a roof over their heads. But it also heard from Peter Cockersall, Director of Health and Recovery at St Mungo's Homeless Charity in London, that a lack of love was a major barrier to helping the homeless. He said he thought there was a shift in thinking in the search for answers to homelessness. Mr Cockersall, who is also a Winchester resident, said psychotherapy to deal with the compound trauma that most homeless people have experienced was showing signs of success. The internet could also be a way of helping to end the sense of isolation for many homeless people. Researcher Carl Stevenson said social networking helped homeless drug users keep in touch with friends, and the internet in general was helping them deal with substance misuse issues. The meeting heard that research by Ali Mackay, the Night Shelter's food coordinator, showed the importance of nutritious food in maintaining people's health. Michelle Price, Night Shelter manager, told the meeting at the Discovery Centre that a new advocacy service was successful, with volunteers accompanying shelter guests on visits to GPs or the job centre. Meanwhile, the City Council said that no one needs to sleep rough on the streets of Winchester during the severe weather. The Night Shelter has 17 regular bed spaces, but during cold weather it increases capacity with 4 additional beds funded by the council as part of its severe weather emergency protocol.
I'm looking at a lovely coloured photograph of some youngsters in all sorts of fancy dress and looking so happy and pleased, and it says, the title is, "Youngsters Did Go to the Ball Eventually." It may have been a little later than is traditional, or perhaps it was ahead of this year's pack, but young wordsmiths at a Winchester school wrote their own pantomime. The impressive 5 to 7-year-olds in years 1 and 2 at Stanmore Primary studied pantomimes after seeing Aladdin at Winchester Theatre Royal before Christmas, and they were inspired to put on their own version of Cinderella. Altogether, 82 children in 3 classes spent last week performing 15-minute shows to their parents, and the staff said they were very well received. And I've got one class here called Rowan Class at Stanmore Primary, and everybody is dressed in something or other. The girls obviously take the biscuit, as it were, some in coloured headgear and wigs, others in organdy dresses or satin dresses, and there's lots of lace around there, and they're all looking very, very smart. The boys even are dressed up too, with coloured waistcoats, and all looking very pleased and very happy, and they've obviously painted their own scenery at the back, looking very resplendent. It looks a wonderful idea. And so the Rowan class performed on Friday morning last. Hazel class performed on Thursday, while the final curtain fell on Monday when Maple class took to the stage.
Food safety won't be compromised, council pledges. There's no horse meat in meals served in Hampshire school or council care homes. The council issued the reassurance following the growing scandal of horse meat in some products sold in supermarkets across the country. Hampshire County Council provides around 8.5 million meals each year to people in its care, some of whom are vulnerable. Meals contain locally sourced ingredients such as beef and pork, whilst meatballs and beef burgers are on the lunch menu for school children are from Laverstoke Park Farm, Overton, and are pure beef. Free-range eggs from the New Forest are also used, as well as apple juice from Selborne and fish from well-managed sustainable fisheries. Said HCC leader Ken Thornber, "We serve around 45,000 meals each day to Hampshire pupils, so we have to be very sure about food safety. We take the food chain back to source and carry out strict hygiene and cleanliness checks in kitchens to ensure that the meals served to children are of the highest standard. What's more, our school meals service remains the only one in the country to hold the Hyperactive Children's Support Group Award for the removal of over 70 additives in food that may cause children a behavioural or medical issue, such as colourants, sulphates and trans fats. Our scientific service checks all the suppliers of food provided by the county, carrying out stringent checks throughout the year, from supply to kitchen and all stages in between, including verifying authenticity of ingredients. We also enforce standards through our trading standards service, and we have a higher focus than many authorities in this area. The food that we supply tends to be provided by local suppliers. By working with them and monitoring the food we purchase, we believe that we are helping local companies meet their statutory obligations, helping them stay in business and ensuring the well-being of Hampshire residents. As a result of this thorough approach, we have been hailed an example of good practice and will continue to ensure we continue to meet our responsibilities and provide reassurance to the people of Hampshire."
Villagers at war with MOD over land sell-off, residents' anger over loss of green space. Defence chiefs have come under fire for selling off part of a village green and a large field where children have played for more than 50 years. Furious residents in Barton Stacey, many of whom have young families, say they were only told a few weeks before the sell-off. Parish chiefs wanted to buy the so-called tennis court field and all the green, but cannot afford the £165,000 price tag. The parish council is already raiding its reserves to buy a sports pitch behind Barton Stacey Primary School and about two-thirds of the green, both of which it currently leases from the MOD for the knockdown price of £7,500. However, the MOD refused to sell the parish all of the green, despite it being a popular play area and venue for village events, including a jubilee party and carols around the Christmas tree. Instead of 0.5-acre slice of the green is to go under the hammer in London next Tuesday, that's February the 19th, along with the tennis court field off Bullington Lane, which is being sold as a single 11-acre lot with a larger field leased to a tenant father, despite requests for it to be sold separately to make it more affordable for the parish council. Other MOD land up for grabs is a 0.6-acre site with 10 rented lock-up garages in Roberts Road and a 0.5-acre green space in West Road. Currently, all the plots are designated countryside and out of bounds to builders, but they are expected to be snapped up by housing developers who will apply to Test Valley Borough Council for a change of use. Reserve prices for the four lots add up to a hefty £335,000, but could fetch far more. More than 80 villagers packed an emergency meeting at the village hall last Sunday. Paul Gibson, chairman of the Barton Stacey Parish Council, said the hall was packed to the gunnels. People were literally hanging out of the door. This is the biggest event that has happened in the village for a long time. The general feeling is that if the large field is sold to a developer, we will get perhaps 50 or 60 houses there, which would be a significant increase in the size of Barton Stacey, which only has about 330 homes. There's a great deal of interest in retaining the smaller field with the tennis court on it. There are people in the village who could afford to make a contribution, but if it goes to auction and is sold on the open market, we certainly could not afford to buy the land. Now villagers have started a letter-writing campaign in a last-ditch bid to persuade defence chiefs to withdraw the land from auction or at least sell all of the green to the parish council. Mr. Gibson added, "There's a general feeling that we need to engage with the MOD." The parish chief said the village only just met its open space requirement under local planning policy with the current play areas and recreation ground. Asked why it had not given the village more notice, an MOD spokesman said all the land was placed on the register of surplus land in April 2011. She said, "The MOD engaged with the parish council and as a result is offering it the opportunity to purchase the sports pitch adjacent to the school. Throughout this process, the MOD has acted in accordance with Treasury guidelines, which require government departments to maximise receipts from the sale of surplus land for the benefit of taxpayers."
She's going nowhere. And this is an extract from the Belgarum. Confusion surrounds one of Winchester's most iconic tourist attractions. Belgarum understands that the bronze statue of Queen Victoria in Winchester Great Hall could move to Queen Elizabeth Country Park near Petersfield. But a spokesman for Hampshire County Council, whose museum service looks after the statue, said there were no plans to relocate the statue. The confusion will not amuse Winchester residents, as the statue is one of the reasons why the Great Hall is the most visited tourist attraction in the city, along with the iconic round table of the semi-legendary King Arthur. The 14-foot statue was made in 1887 by Sir Alfred Gilbert and given to the city by High Sheriff William Ingham Walker on Queen Victoria's Golden Jubilee in May of the same year.
Heart specialist appointed at RHCH. Meet a man who knows more than most about mending broken hearts. With Valentine's Day this week, love is well and truly in the air, and it would seem appropriate that Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, which runs Winchester's Royal Hampshire County Hospital, has announced the appointment of a new heart doctor. Dr. Dominic Kelly, 37, has joined a 5-strong consultant team in cardiology at the Trust, which also includes Andover and Basingstoke hospitals. Dr. Kelly is the new lead medical practitioner for heart failure and devices, such as pacemakers, at the RHCH and Andover War Memorial Hospital. Dr. Kelly, who is on the board of the British Society for Heart Failure, lives in Otterbourne with his wife Pauline, a GP. The couple have a 3-year-old daughter, Freya, and 11-month-old son, James. His new role includes expanding consultant-led services at the RHCH. This includes general cardiology and heart failure. Dr. Kelly said, "Previously, Winchester patients would have to be referred elsewhere, for example, the Royal Brompton in London, whereas now more will be treated and followed up locally."
Pop in for some energy advice. A Winchester environmental group has launched a pop-up shop to help residents tackle climate change and save on energy bills. Winchester Action on Climate Change, that's WINACC, launched the shop in the Brooks Centre on Tuesday morning with the help of Winchester MP Steve Brine, along with Councillor Roger Huckstep, City Council portfolio holder for Environment. Chris Holloway, WINACC's director, said, "The shop explains the various things you can do in your home to save energy, like better insulation, lighting and wood-burning stoves. It's government-funded from money received by the City Council from the Department of Energy and Climate Change and will run until March the 31st when the funding runs out. WINACC has received £140,000 funding overall for the various climate change projects, including the pop-up shop. The first 130 visitors to the shop received a free Green Deal assessment of their homes, a programme launched by the government last week. The assessment normally costs between £99 and £199.
Gardeners conned vulnerable pensioner. A gardener who runs a Chancellor's Ford-based landscaping firm and his uncle, A gardener who runs a Chancellor's Ford-based landscaping firm and his uncle faced prison after conning a pensioner out of thousands of pounds. They were found guilty of ripping off the elderly man, who was forced to pay for work they supposedly carried out in his garden. Robert Whittaker and his nephew James would cold call residents across the county to try to get work. They will have to wait until later this month to learn their sentence after being convicted of fraud. Jurors at Southampton Crown Court acquitted James's brother John, 43, of the charge. The court heard how the pair, known as Bill and Jimmy, conned an 89-year-old man out of £6,400 for work they claimed to have done in his garden on some 13 occasions between July and December 2011. They'd even driven him to the bank to take money out of the cashpoint machine on occasions and were only caught when staff at HSBC Bank noticed unusual transactions on the victim's account and raised the alarm. James, aged 40, ran Chandler's Ford Tree and Landscape Services, but would often use his Uncle Robert to assist with heavy work. He told jurors how he was not a dishonest man, but had never paid tax because he didn't think he earned enough. Robert had been in the trade for 15 years, running his own firm, Robert Whittaker Tree Care, and said he would rather die than rip off a customer because his own mother had fallen victim to rogue traders in the past. Prosecutor Charles Gabb told the court, "Not an awful lot happens in the garden in December. They turned up 6 times in a 26-day period and conned him out of money on each and every occasion. They performed very little work of any value." He described the victim as a vulnerable target that they could exploit, and they did so repeatedly and callously. Robert, 47, formerly of Enol Copse, North Battersley, and James, 40, from Triangle Gardens, Nursling, will be sentenced on February the 17th.
Knife-wielding robber targets garage. Police are hunting a man who robbed a Winchester garage armed with a knife. The man entered Pitvale Garage on Rumsey Road last Thursday evening at about 7 p.m. and demanded money from the till. However, the man agreed to take three packets of tobacco, valued at around £20, when he was told there was no cash. After leaving the garage, he walked towards the city centre. The man was wearing a grey hooded top with a black pattern and a scarf to cover his face. He is described as white, about 5'6" tall and of slight build. He also wore black tracksuit bottoms and trainers. Detective Constable Steve Roman said, "This petrol station is located off a roundabout on the road that leads to Hursley. The site is secluded and set back from the road, but is well illuminated. I am appealing for anyone who may have seen the offender in the Rumsey Road area to come forward and speak to us. I would urge anyone with any information to get in touch at the earliest opportunity. Anyone with information should contact Detective Constable Roman at North Walls CID on 101, that's simply 101, or call Crime Stoppers anonymously on 0800 555 111. I'll read that again. 0800 555 111.
As is to put hospice funding case to PM. Naomi House boss Khalid Aziz was due to meet the Prime Minister at Westminster on last Wednesday to discuss changes to hospice funding. It follows a question raised in the House of Commons in December that challenged why adult hospices get more government cash than those dealing with children, like the Sutton Scotney-based charity. Asked about the disparity between funding, David Cameron expressed his surprise. As a result, Mr. Cameron agreed to meet Professor Aziz, the chairman of Naomi House, Salisbury MP John Glenn, who raised the issue at Prime Minister's Questions, and Winchester MP Steve Brine. As well as losing out on government funding, Naomi House has also raised concerns about the way it is considered a private clinic when paying for essential medicines needed by the children and young people in its care. Mr. Cameron agreed that more needed to be done to ensure funding for children's hospices was fair and equitable. Professor Aziz says, "We have been trying for several years to secure substantial and sustainable funding for our organisations. It's a problem that faces all children's hospices, and we now have the opportunity to raise the issue on their behalf. Naomi House provides respite, emergency and end-of-life care to life-limited and life-threatened children and young people across Hampshire and six other counties in central southern England. It needs to find £7 million a year to help around 300 youngsters and their families, but relies on the generosity of the public to provide its services free of charge."
Big rise in cost of local elections. The estimate cost for this year's Hampshire County Council elections is £1.5 million, up on 50% on the previous election. This is equivalent to £19,330 to elect each of the 78 councillors on the council, whose seats are all up for grabs after serving four-year terms. The bill includes costs such as poll staff, hire of polling stations and printing of ballot papers, but not campaign costs, which are paid by political parties. The 11 district councils in Hampshire run the election on behalf of the county council, which foots the bill. Councillors in Winchester City Council are not up for election. Tory county chiefs have earmarked £1.5 million in the 2013-14 budget for the local election on May the 4th, £500,000 more than the last election in 2009. A council report said this was based on estimated costs from district councils. Expenses include fees for returning officers in each of the 11 district councils, which are responsible for the smooth running of elections. In Winchester, Director of Governance Stephen Wetnall was paid £17,000 in 2011 and £14,000 in 2012, on top of his £82,000 salary. Mr. Wetnall said, "It is not just supervising on election day, but being responsible for running the operation running up to it, including training poll staff and dealing with any problems that might arise." He said this could take up to 3 months. But the steep rise in costs has come under fire from anti-council tax campaigners. Mike Schofield, a member of Is It Fair, who lives in Bishop's Waltham, said, £1.5 million is a horrendous amount of money to be spent on local elections. On top of this, there are costs of district, parish, and now police commissioner elections. If the county council election cost £1 million 4 years ago, why is there a 50% increase in cost, which is coming out of the public purse? Reasons for increased costs are believed to include more postal voting and measures to combat fraud, for example, double-checking signatures. In 2009, county elections were held on the same day as EU elections, which would have helped reduce costs, such as hiring of polling stations, although there were two ballot papers and more votes to count.
Counties pledge on Meals on Wheels. Hampshire County Council says it's intent on improving the services provided to older people in the north of the county when a private company takes over Meals on Wheels delivery from volunteer-led WRVS in April. Many have questioned how a private company, Appetito, can run a service for less than the cost of one based on volunteers through the long-established WRVS. A spokesman for the County Council said, "The WRVS charged for the service despite using volunteers, but were not providing a 7 days a week service. The current service is patchy and inconsistent and does not cover all areas of Hampshire. WRVS submitted a bid but did not win the tender, which was evaluated on the basis of cost and quality." Councillor Felicity Hineson, Executive Member for Adult Social Care at the county, said, "I would like to reassure everyone who currently receives Meals on Wheels that they can continue to do so in the future. And in response to recent concerns, reassure residents that the Appetito delivery drivers will be checking customers are well every time they make a delivery."
Emmaus Hampshire to expand. Winchester homeless charity Emmaus Hampshire, which provides work and accommodation for the homeless, is increasing its provision from 24 to 26 people. The charity will build two new suites on site, along with some additional workshop space, and is currently raising funds for the project after gaining planning permission. Chairman Alison Thompson said, "Homelessness continues its inexorable rise in Hampshire, and so we are determined to do what we can to increase our provision for those unfortunate enough to be forced onto the streets."
Outdoor gym for all. Outdoor fitness equipment is about to be installed in Winchester, offering free opportunities for people to stay fit. The £20,000 gym next to the play area on Imber Road, Winnell, offers the chance for anyone to boost their fitness and is free to use. The funding has come from the City Council's Open Space Fund for a health walker, sit-up bench, power push, pull-down challenger, handle boat, push hands, ski stepper, and mini ski, all set on a soft surface. Councillor Patricia Stallard, portfolio holder for Culture, Heritage and Sport, said, "As a council, we do all we can to improve the health and well-being of residents in our community. Some of the equipment is particularly important for older users. It improves flexibility and agility of joints. Now there is no excuse not to keep fit whilst enjoying the great outdoors. We hope that residents will lead an active and healthy lifestyle while being able to socialise at the same time."
Listed house can be extended. A Grade 2 listed building in the historic core of Winchester will be extended and modified despite strong objections from neighbours. A planning meeting last week heard an application from Jonathan and Jeanette Munro Ford, who plan to add a single and two-storey extension to their home, sparking criticism from Peter Matthews, who lives in the adjacent house on Cannon Street. Much of the debate centred on plans received for amended guttering, with objector Mr. Matthews disputing the accuracy of plans submitted and the effect on his property. Mr. Matthews told the Guildhall meeting that the works would cause him considerable disruption. However, speaking on behalf of the applicants, Simon Goddard, a specialist in modifications to period buildings, said he had taken considerable time to research the history of the area, including consulting Professor Martin Biddle's gazetteer of the area. Planning officers were satisfied with the accuracy of the plans, and councillors voted unanimously to allow the extension.
Warning over bike thefts. Police in Winchester are advising residents to review their security following the theft of 6 bikes across the city. Thieves have struck at sheds and garages in St Cross, Hyde, Abbots Barton and Stanmore recently. A shed was broken into overnight in Back Street, St Cross, and a high-value men's rock rider bike was stolen. A communal bike shed in St Cross Road was also targeted, and thieves took a red Carrera mountain bike and a black Specialized mountain bike. There was also an attempted shed break-in in Romans Road. Sheds and garages have also been targeted in Austin Close and Abbots Road, both Abbots Barton, Thurmond Crescent, Stanmore, and Arlington Place, Hyde. Sergeant Matt Fancett from Winchester Police advised people to ensure side gates are locked, tools and garden equipment placed in locked sheds and garages, and items to be security or postcoded.
Sorry. Spending on the up as county reveals new budget. Hampshire County Council's budget has been unveiled with some big increases in spending. The Conservative-run council, which is up for election this May, is planning to dip into its £307 million cash reserves to balance the budget over the next 2 years and fund new initiatives, including speedier broadband in rural areas and Winchester District heating scheme. 5 new child protection social work teams are to be set up at a cost of £2.5 million per year, providing up to 40 frontline social workers under the budget which has been approved by the Cabinet. The aim is to reduce high caseloads and ensure the safety of the most vulnerable children at risk of abuse or neglect. It will also cut the bill for expensive agency staff. Each team would comprise a team manager, assistant team manager, 8 social workers, plus support staff, and cost an estimated £500,000 per year. Other spending programmes confirmed are an extra £1.5 million per year to provide more help for struggling families and to prevent increasing numbers of children being taken into care. £10,000 for each of the 78 councillors to spend on environmental projects in their own divisions at a price tag of £780,000. An additional £11 million for adult social care to tackle the rising demand for services from an elderly and increasingly frail population, including home care.
That concludes our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors, who were Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase, and thanks also to our various technical teams. And thanks to our readers, who were Margot Meredith.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Peter Lydiard.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too, and have a good week. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.